I'm going to go ahead and invite our guest speaker from tonight. He is from India, Sheikh Ali Hemani, who will be speaking about Jihad-e-Tabiin and the propaganda against Imam Hassan alayhi salam with a salawat ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad.
Salaam alaikum wa rahmatullah. Please recite a surah Fatiha for all marhumin and marhumat. أعوذ بالله من نفسي ومن الشيطان اللين الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وبه نستعين وصلى الله على سيدنا وحبيبنا وطبيب قلوبنا أبي القاسم محمد اللهم صل على محمد وأهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم وقال الله تعالى في كتاب المبين أفتؤمنون ببعض الكتاب وتكفرون ببعض. Please recite the salawat. Muhammad wa'ajjal farajam. First and foremost, we would like to extend our felicitations to the Imam of our time on this gracious occasion of the Waladat of the second Hujjat of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, that is Imam Hassan al-Mujtaba alayhi salam. And we seek from the Imam of the time to grant us the blessings and the special benefits that this holy month of Maha Ramzan brings along with it. Please recite the salawat. Wa'ajjil farajam. The topic today that we're going to discuss about is Jihad-e-Tabiin and how there was propaganda against the Imam Hassan alayhi salam at his time. But let's first understand the concept of Jihad-e-Tabiin and why Maqam-e-Muazzam-e-Rahbari has mentioned about it. And he said that this needs to take place as soon as possible, right? When we talk about Jihad-e-Tabiin, the term Tabiin means to present, to explain, to set out and provide that necessary information and guidance. So Bayan, it comes from the word Bayan, so Tabiin. That's where it originates from. But let's try and understand our behavior so far and the need for Maqam-e-Muazzam-e-Rahbari to come and mention that we need to start a jihad now, meaning that he has observed something in us that he felt the need to come and talk about it. If we had the right kind of a behavior, we had the right kind of approach, then there would have been no need for him to come and mention about it, emphasize the necessity of it, and mention that you need to start as soon as possible, ASAP. So what has been our approach towards Tabiin when it comes to bayan of the religion? You all would know that there was a time right close to about 9/11, a little before and a little after that, that all of us, when it came to Islam, had a very apologetic approach. You know, the media would constantly attack Islam. The media would constantly tell us that, you know, you are barbaric, terrorists, and you attack and you kill innocent people, so on and so forth. And constantly they would show Saddam, you know, committing crimes. And that was right. Pointing out that he's wrong and tyrant was right. But they used a classic case of mixing black and white together and presenting Islam as a black entity, right? And all we did was act apologetically. We kept saying that, you know, rather defending that, no, actually it's not like that. You know, Islam is all about peace. You know, if you look at the term Islam, it comes from salam. And if you look at Muslim, it means submitting to the will of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So it's all about peace. And So we all did that, but they continued their strategy because they had a well-defined and planned strategy, whereas we had no strategy in place. Right? Neither the ulama nor the people. I'm not talking about the system that is Islamic Republic of Iran. I'm not talking about that. Today, when Rahbar mentions that, you know, jihad-e-tab'een, he's not just referring to the system. He's also referring to us as people and ulama. So let's try and look at it from this aspect, that we as people and ulama, what are we supposed to do? So we had an apologetic approach that, no, actually, you know what? And then it was not just about terrorism. They moved towards hijab. And they said, this is oppression. There's discrimination of women and the women issues, the inheritance, the witness. And they brought in so many shubahat. And all we did was we played the role of being apologetic. That was our first stance. And this went on for a few years. About 5, 7, 8 years, we just kept playing apologetic. And they continued their strategy. Then the next step we took was to defend. How did we defend? We started writing and providing answers. Why? Because after playing apologetic for a little while, we realized that they are not accepting our information and input and data as valid data. And they're continuing with their strategy. And that is when people started reading books from Shahid Mutahari, from Shahid Baqir al-Sadr. And then they started realizing that how communism and how others had earlier attacked on Islam, and they had provided the suitable answers for that. So there's a book on women's issues. There's a book on jihad. There's a book on nationalism. There's a book on how to counter the Marxism and the ideology of communism. There's a book on theology from Shahid Mutahari who counters the arguments from communism against theology. So people started reading those books. And then came the phase where we started defending ourselves. Meaning that we were apologetic, but now we are defending and we are providing answers. Are we better off than earlier? Yes, we are better off than earlier state. But are we at the best state? No, we are not. Why are we still not at the best state? Because while we are defending, we still continue taking blows from them. You know, every now and then something would land upon us and would severely damage and hurt us. And because of this attitude of being reactive, we've seen that there's very little progress that's happening among the ummah, right? I'm not talking about the system. I'm talking about people. People still don't see it as upon themselves to defend Islam. The common man, he says, that's not my job. I don't have to defend Islam. I don't have to defend Shiite. I don't have to defend anything about religion. It's the job of ulama. It's the job of the system. It's the job of wilayat faqih. Why should I have to put in any effort? While if you look at them, every single member in their community is attacking Islam. Every single one has filled their hearts with hatred towards Islam, right? So they're working extensively, not just through the system, not just through the scholars, but from the public point of view. So they're forming public opinion against Islam, right? And what is our ummah doing? We're just sitting back and hoping others will do the job. So even in that state, you would find that apart from scholars, some people took upon them to defend Islam. And you will find them on our YouTube channels, you'll find them on the Facebook, taking a stance and defending the system of wilayat, defending Islam, answering questions, so on and so forth. However, we are still lacking in the most important phase. And this is where we need to understand that when Maqam-e-Muazzam Rahbari says jihad-e-tab'een, he's not talking about defending, right? When we talk about jihad, jihad has two phases to it. One is jihad-e-ibtidai, one is jihad-e-difai. And so far, we've always spoken about jihad-e-difai. We said jihad means someone attacks upon us and we defend ourselves. And Maqam-e-Muazzam Rahbari is not talking about this element of jihad-e-tab'een, that they're attacking us, we need to defend ourselves. No. If we are in that perspective, if we are with that perception, then we're still missing out on the essential message of Maqam-e-Muazzam Rahbari. He's talking about jihad-e-ibtidai. And this is not even ibtidai. They've already initiated the attack. Now, we not only need to defend, but also need to attack their ideology. And this is where we need to prepare ourselves. And this is where we are lacking. And if we still, do tafsir of the bayan of Maqam-e Muazzam Rahbari as a defensive mode, that means they're attacking and now we need to defend, then we're already too late. We shouldn't be thinking about defending. Now we should be thinking about dual approach. Defending from one side and attacking from the other side. It is only then that we can weaken the roots of the enemy. Else he will continue. They will continue with their strategy. And they have planned their strategy well. So we need to understand this and start preparing for it. And that's why Maqam-e Muazzam Rahbari says ASAP. ASAP meaning that you have enough material to defend yourself. I'm not talking about that. Prepare your strategies for attack ASAP. As soon as possible. So that's what he's talking about. If you look at them, they have been working on this extensively. And not just working on this extensively, they've been promoting the idea about it. Saying that we are working on it. You know, there was a time when enemy would do shararat, spread shar, do mischief, and hide behind the curtain and said, we didn't do it. There was a time like that. Then came a time when the enemy became jasur, jasarat, confident. And when he does something, he says, we are doing it. What can you do about it? And this is when we realize that they have become bullies now, right? And that's why you will see in Hollywood, they make movies and show it to us that this is how we are doing it. If you have the courage, if you have the guts, if you have the power, try and counter it. Look at some of their movies. One of their movies, I don't know if you've seen it. There's a movie very long time ago. It's called Lions for Lambs. If you haven't watched it, have a look at it. I'll tell you what the movie is about and why we need to see how they're working. They basically present their approach and their strategies there. There's another movie called Body of Lies. I don't know if you've seen it, but if you've not, you must watch it. You know, you might be thinking that this is a weird sheikh sitting on member who's promoting movies and saying, go and watch movies. No, you need to watch some movies to understand how they work, how they strategize against us. So in this movie called Lions for Lambs, they show that there's an extremely smart college student, and somewhere during the term, he's not able to relate to the approach and the strategy of the university. So he backs out, he doesn't go to the classes, he doesn't attend classes, and he's falling behind the subjects. Then the teacher calls him, says, what's wrong, what's happening? And then there's a whole conversation there which talks about that, what are we doing? You know, they, as in the Muslims, are attacking on our ideology. They're attacking on our people. They're killing our people. What are we doing? How are we fixing? So on and so forth. And then he constantly counsels him and tells him and gives him the strategy how to stand up, take up those higher positions in the parliament, take up those higher positions as president, and make those decisions to attack those countries and destroy them. And they're showing it in the movies that we are counseling our people to become those senators who are eventually going to contend for the presidential position and who will plan and strategize and launch preemptive attacks on the Muslim countries. Similarly, Body of Lies. If you look at that, there's another movie called Syriana. Very complicated movie. It took me 3 times to watch it and understand how they strategized the whole movie about it. So they're being brave about it. They're being bold about it. This is how we work. What can you do? Because they have the confidence and they know that we lack that capability to plan and strategize like them. Why? Because they have their own teams set up for this. They have people whom they counsel and train and educate and specialize and make them experts in those specific fields who sit and strategize. They're the think tank. They're the brain behind everything. And they spend 24 hours a day thinking about how to make America, Britain, Israel, the superpowers in the world, and how to stop these Muslim countries from becoming even progressive or developmental. Forget about superpowers. How do we rob them from all their riches, from their oil, from their gold, from their intellectuals? What do I do to steal the intellectuals from their countries and bring them to America and use them for American benefit? So they have teams set up for this. And who are the part, who are the members of this team? Psychologists, experts, geniuses. If you've heard of this person, we were just sitting and talking about it here. If you've heard of this person called Professor John Nash. Professor John Nash is a Nobel laureate. He was awarded Nobel Prize. Why was he awarded Nobel Prize? Because he propounded a theory called game theory. What was the game theory? If I go technical, it's very complicated. But he himself made an approach and said, let me put it in a very simple terms so that you understand what game theory is all about. He says, imagine I find a diamond and I want to sell this diamond and I find a buyer. And the buyer agrees to pay a certain price for this diamond. So I know that I have a buyer. He's willing to pay a price for this diamond, and I want to sell this diamond. So we both agree to meet at a specific point and exchange the diamond and the money. What could be easier and more simple than this? But he says, however, this is where the game theory starts. He says, however, there is a probability that the buyer might cheat me, bring some goons along with him, beat me up, take the diamond, take the money, and walk away. So he will have the diamond, and he will have the money, and I will have nothing with me. So let's come up with an alternative. What's an alternative? The alternative is that I keep the diamond at X place, he will keep the money at Y place, we both meet up, and I give him the address for diamond, and he gives me the address for money. He goes and picks up the diamond, I go and pick up the money. How convenient. Very convenient. Then he says, however. However what? What if he gives me the wrong address? And I give him the right address. So he goes and picks up the diamond, and he will still have the money, and I go to a X place where there's no money. So again, I end up being empty-handed. So what do I do? And then he says that because there's a probability that my buyer can cheat me, therefore, right from the beginning, I should strategize to cheat him. That way, either he will come prepared, I will come prepared, both will protect ourselves from getting cheated, and essentially, he will get the diamond and I'll get the money. Or the worst case scenario, I end up cheating him and I'll have the diamond and the money. So in both cases, I don't end up losing. Great. Is that all? He says, no. Promote this idea. Promote this idea so much in the community that everybody is trying to cheat everybody, and everybody will try to protect themselves from getting cheated. Essentially, it'll lead to equilibrium, where no one will get cheated because everybody is trying to protect themselves and everybody is trying to cheat themselves. They said, excellent. Amazing. This is how we establish Adalat in the community. And they gave him a Nobel Prize. Is that over there? No. This is where I want you to pay attention. When it comes to strategies and ideas like this, the government not just give them the Nobel Prize, but they bring them into their system and say, you are the genius we were looking for. And they sponsor them, they fund them, and they work with them. They take them and use them to strategize their political plans. And now I'm going to use a phrase that will immediately help you understand how this game theory was used for political purposes. WMD, mushroom cloud. Iraq, Saddam Hussein has WMDs. Before he could attack us and we see the mushroom cloud, let's attack him. Brother, did you go and check? Do they have? No. But I give the probability. How do you come up with probability? Some random theory. He's buying this from here, he's buying that from there, and therefore, I'm more or less sure that he has weapons of mass destruction. And before he attacks us, let's attack him. That's what John Nash said. Before he cheats me, I should cheat him. So America attacks Afghanistan. Now, we as ulama, we as people, how many of us are trying to form groups, communities, committees, core teams, where we bring in geniuses, where we bring in psychologists, where we bring in experts who can understand their way of living, their culture, their ideology, their way of life, and plan a strategy that can attack the root of their culture? We don't. We think I'm the smart one. How much analysis have we done? How many of us have even paid attention or made an attempt to study the psychology and try and understand the mass behavior there? What's their mass behavior? What's their mass attitude? How do they think? If you look at the Trump election, they hired a company from London, Data Informatics, if I'm not wrong. Cambridge Analytics, right? So they hired that company, and what did that company do for Trump? Manipulated the opinions of people. And the first thing they told Trump was, we have 1,200 data points about all the members, all the people living in A, B, C, D, E, F regions. And with those data points, we can tell you the kind of message you should use, the kind of language you should use, the kind of dress you should wear, the kind of terminologies you should use that will lead you towards victory. So they're using data. They're using information. And when we strategize, we barely look at any of these elements. And this is where Maqam-e-Muazzam al-Rahbari is telling us. Jihad, it's war. Let me put it in very simple terms. Imagine we trying to fight a war with our enemy who's invading us with guns and weaponry and tankers and missiles, and all we have is a sword and a shield. Who's going to win? Obviously the enemy. It's going to be a massacre. They're just going to come and wipe us out. Now, enemy is using psychological tools and influencing the conscious and the subconscious mind of people. Now, if I stick to my old strategies where I think that I'm good enough to influence people through member and that only, then I won't be able to win against them. Because they are using multiple tools. They're using multimedia, they're using social media, they're using animation, they're using Hollywood. They're influencing the children right from the childhood. They realize that if I can't influence the grown-ups, let's target the children right from the birth, right from 6 months old. And then by the time they're 14 years old, they are promoters and propagators of our ideology, materialism. There's a documentary called Consuming Kids, which talks about how materialism is promoted. They say that these great, huge corporate organizations who are, you know, abar qudrat, if we say in, superpowers, if we want to call it, the huge corporate, they have done their research and they know that a child, when he or she reaches 6 months, that is the time they're ready to take messages and absorb it in their subconscious mind. And right from then, they start planning and strategizing methods to influence the child right from 6 months. So that by the time the child is 7 years old, he's already manufactured. They've manufactured his ideology. And unfortunately, we say, I'm sorry to use a Urdu term, but abhi to bachcha hai, khelne do, khelne kudne ke din hai. And then we just let him play and go to Mahdi Kudak and all that. And they're already working on his psychology. And we bring him and put him in front of the TV. Even in Iran. Even Puya channel. A lot of animation is Western animation, just translated. The message still remains the same. The subliminal messages still remain the same. We have to be careful here. We just can't give our children on silver platter to them. We can't hand it over to them like this so that they can manufacture our children. It is upon us to do their tarbiyat. If we don't do the tarbiyat, they are doing their job. They're doing the tarbiyat of our children. If you've been to Tehran, you know what I'm talking about. What is the state of hijab there? Why is it that a girl, when she turns 9, is refusing to wear hijab? Because they've been watching TV, they've been watching Puya, they've been watching Mr. Bean, they've been watching ABC, whatever, since they are 3 years old. They're watching Mano 2 and all these channels, and by the time they're 9 years old, their psychology is already manufactured. Then the father says, Azizam, hala baligh shudi, biya chadar bepush. No, I don't want to wear chadar. Why? And that's when they start wondering, what happened? What happened? You allowed the enemy to work upon your child. But this is what happened. So jihad-e-tabi'in is from one aspect, defense. From the other aspect, attack. And surprisingly, just a little analysis will tell you that when the enemy is attacking, he's using a two-dimensional sword. He's attacking the system, and he's attacking the ideology of the people. So he's not just working on the psychology of the people. He's also attacking the system of wilayat. He's also attacking the Hukumat-e-Islami. So they're doing a dual job. And if we continue to remain in the defensive mode, we can only take it to a certain extent. At some point, you need to attack them. You need to instill fear in their hearts. Defense will not instill fear in their hearts. Please remember this. Being defensive is not going to instill fear in their hearts. If you want to instill fear in their heart, you have to attack them. And that's why in their teams, they have all these experts sitting and working and trying to convert our children into their followers and their propagators. Please understand, we as scholars, now let's talk about a little about scholars. We as scholars, we barely tend to work in teams, but they always work in teams, right? And they're working for maqsad-e-fasid. And remember, it's the bullies who always work in teams, especially when they are trying to scare you, not when they're trying to take you towards sa'adat. But when you have a team attacking on you, one man can't defend the whole community. We need to form teams now. We need to set aside our differences. We talk about Ittihad Bainul Milal and international unity and all that. I think first, we need to unite and say, okay, forget everything. Let's just plan, strategize, and attack. That should be our strategy. Let's set our differences aside. Let's understand. I'm a little worried. He might get wounded. Let's come together. Sit together. Let's discuss which of our scholars have which set of skills and talents and capabilities. How many of you are psychologists? How many of you are, mass communicators? How many of you have done your master's in X field and Y field? Let's bring all that information together and then form teams together and assign tasks. How many of you are data analysts? Okay, there are 5 people who are data analysts. Use their own methods. Use their own Facebook. Use their own social media channels and try and analyze their people. Analyze their ideology, analyze their understanding, and then strategize. How do I attack them? How do I work on their ideologies? And this is exactly what Imam Hassan alayhi salam did at the time of his If you see what Mafia did, Mafia was using psychological warfare. He was not attacking Imam physically. He was altering the mentality of people towards Imam Hassan alayhi salam. Today, we have social media. At that time, they had Mimbar. Mimbar was their social media. So he took control of Mimbar. And from Mimbar, he constantly did la'an and sub of Imam Ali alayhi salam and Imam Hassan alayhi salam. And what did Imam Hassan alayhi salam do? To the extent he had access and his ashab had access, he also used social media, the same Mimbar, but with a strategy. Like Brother Shahriyar mentioned right at the beginning, that Imam Khomeini says that even though Imam Hassan alayhi salam signed a peace treaty, it was absolutely humiliating for Muawiyah. So that's his approach. He humiliated Muawiyah with the limited resources he had. Why? Because he had a strategy with him. So he used the Mimbar. He followed two important methods. Two essential, fundamental, important methods. And I think we need to follow that as well. One, he presented the haqqaiq, the reality, the truth from the Mimbar. Constantly pointing out that, look, Mafia is saying this, but Quran is saying this. Rasul Khuda sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, please recite a salawat. Wajjal faraja. Holy Prophet is talking so and so about Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. Holy Prophet is talking so and so about Islam. And Muawiyah is talking against what the Holy Prophet said. And therefore, presenting the haqqaiq, the truth, already puts a barrier. Second, he used his akhlaq to make sure that all the people who had a misunderstanding about Islam, about the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, they had a better understanding of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. The very famous incident that one of the Shami came to Imam Hassan alayhi salam and started doing la'an and sub, and he says, are you new to the place? Are you tired? Are you a traveler? Would you like to come to my place, rest and eat? And he remains at his place for a couple of days and then accepts the wilayat of Imam Hassan alayhi salam, right? But let me tell you, that was that time. Today we have people who are either speaking out of jahle murakkab, that means they don't know and they're talking. You present the haqqaiq to them, you use your akhlaqi behavior with them, they will convert, they will change. Why? Because it's jahle murakkab, absolute ignorance. But there are those who are not speaking from jahle murakkab, they're speaking out of intention, amdi. Amdan, they're trying to defame the Islam, defame the religion, defame the Ahlul Bayt, defame the system of wilayat, defame the Islamic Republic of Iran. And for these people, you can't say, are you new to the place? Come to my place, stay at my place for 2 days, have food, relax, and then I'm sure you will convert. No, they are hell-bent upon annihilating us. So if you invite them to your house, they're going to come to your house, massacre all of us, and take control of our house. So now the enemy is worse than Mafia. Now the enemy is worse than Mafia, and therefore we need to strategize even more stringently and more carefully than the strategies that the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam used. So we need to form more stronger teams with deeper strategy, with deeper analysis. It's only then that we will be able to counter them appropriately. If you look at further from there, you will see that after Imam Hassan alayhi salam and the event of Karbala, the situation was favorable for Imam Baqir alayhi salam and Imam Jafar al-Sadiq alayhi salam. Please recite a salawat. What did they do? They immediately grabbed the opportunity and established Hawza system. Or rather, let me say, education system rather than Hawza system. And what did they do through that? They formed the ideology of the people. They worked on the worldview of people. They were changing the Jahanbini of the people. Today, West is doing that. West is changing the Jahanbini of the Muslim Ummah. We need to protect our children and counterattack. First, fix our children and revert their Jahanbini towards Islamic Jahanbini and work on them, attack on them to annihilate their materialistic Jahanbini and move it towards Islamic Jahanbini. Does it call for planning? Absolutely. Does it call for strategizing? Absolutely. Does it call for hundreds of hours of sitting and discussing and meeting and analyzing data, tons and terabytes of data? Yes, absolutely. And if we want to win, we have to do this. And they've done that. They did it. They started off in 1930s and 1940s. They planned, they strategized, they analyzed data, and they started implementing their strategies, saw the results, and kept improvising their strategies. And now, after 50, 60 years, they're reaping the benefits and fruits of their strategies. So someone has to start today, somewhere, and also realize the same words of Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah, that our job is to initiate. There's a high probability that I don't see the results of the revolution in my lifetime. And that's exactly my words today. That this core team that we form and we discuss and we strategize, we might not be able to see the results in our lifetime. But that's okay. Somewhere you need to start. This is Jihad-e-Tab'een that Maqam-e-Muazzam Rahbari is talking about. And this is what Insan-e-Deen-e-Sipanja-Saleh talks about. That how they strategized, how they planned, how they strategized in a way that it took 250 years, but that's okay. But things materialized. Today we have a system of wilayat in place, a Hukumat-e-Islami that is being ruled by Shia Maraja in place. This is the result of the 250 years of strategy that they put in place and the sacrifices that the ulamas after that has put in for 1,000 years, 1,200 years, and this is the outcome. And today we are seeing the results. So today we have to start, and we might see results after 50, 40, 60, 80, 100 years. But somewhere, someone has to start. Just like Imam Hussein alayhi salam, someone has to stand up and be willing to sacrifice everything. Willing to sacrifice everything. That is when that revolution, the psychological revolution, will happen. And that is when we will take our first steps towards Jihad-e-Tab'een and towards that victory. Please recite the Salawat. Just my last words, and I'll finish the zahmat of you all, is that if you've not read this book called Tahajjum-e-Farhangi by Ayatollah Misbah Yazdi, I would highly recommend people to read these books. Right? He mentioned it in his book that the psychological warfare, the soft war, the Jang-e-Narm that we are facing today is worse than the 8-year war that we fought against Saddam. Why is it worse? Because then they were robbing you of your house. They were robbing you of your land. They were robbing you of your property. The worst that they did was they attacked you, they shot you, they killed you. And if you died in that war, you became a martyr, you became a shaheed. But today, the psychological warfare is not robbing you of your property, your maal, your land. It's robbing you of your etiqadat. It's robbing you of your belief system. It's robbing you of your faith. And if you lose to this and you get if you get killed in this psychological warfare, you're not a shaheed, you become Ahl-e Jahannam. Why? Because if you lost to this war, means you lost your faith, you lost your belief system, you lost your tawheed. When you lose your tawheed, you're no longer a shaheed of the war, you're Ahl-e Jahannam. And that's why we need to take this very, very seriously. And look at it from this point of view. I would, you know, like to end with the last note here, that I would highly recommend that we should go, as scholars, we should go and look at some of the psychological experiments that these people conduct. I'm sure you must have heard of it. If you've not heard of it, go and do a little research on this. There's something called prison experiment. Have a look at it. There's something called Milgram's experiment. Go have a look at it. There's an experiment called the blonde girl and the courtroom. Have a look at it. There's so many more experiments. Apart from that, there are documentaries. Century of Self, Hypernormalization. Have a look at it. People have had the courage to come forth and present the reality. And when you do that, you will see that how they're working, how they're planning, how they are strategizing. And therefore, somewhere, some day or some time in near future, inshallah, it lights a little fire in our heart, and inshallah, it turns into a torch, and supported by the warmth and the fire of our iman, it turns into a wildfire, inshallah, that'll annihilate the enemy and make Islam victorious in the West, inshallah. Wa sallallahu ala Sayyidina Muhammad wa ahli baytihi tayyabina tahirin. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajjil farajahum. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Allahumma kulli waliyaka al-hujjat ibn al-Hasan salwatuka alayhi wa ala abaih fi hazihi sa'ati wa fi kulli sa'ah waliyan wa hafizan wa qaidan wa nasiran wa dalilan wa aina hatta tuskinahu ardaka taw'ah wa tumatti'ahu fiha tawila birahmatika ya arhamar rahimin. Ameen ya rabbal alameen. Please recite a salwat.